Welcome to the Noise to Signal podcast. My name is Doug Craver.
And this is Jack Ricciuto.
Together, we're exploring through interviews and discussion how founders, creators, producers, and makers discover and sustain their passions and focus for life. So, welcome to Noise to Signal. This is our third episode, and our next guest is someone who I've been blessed to get to know over the last, I would think, about 10 years, I think, roughly. J.U., who has launched several ventures and also products. He has impressed me with his ability to use Kickstarter as a channel to sell product. So hopefully we'll get some good insights there, but we'll welcome J.U. Thank you for being here.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Jay. So Jack's here with me, and I'll start off this episode with my usual question, which was, was there a point in your life where you realized that you would be headed down this road with your career in terms of the things that you're doing?
Yes. It's a very vivid memory.
Okay.
And it probably I knew earlier, but it didn't become really clear until this point. And things unfold in unusual ways to open things up, to allow one to, you know, step in and see if, you know, something like, you know, there's going to be a different path in one's career or life or whatever. And so what I mean by that is I was working for SwageLock, which is a very large privately held industrial manufacturing company here in Cleveland. Very successful. And I entered that company right out of college, and I'll start there, and it kind of leads me up to that moment. I started on a shop floor assembling these pieces and parts, and started literally broke into tears. Like, this is just not for me, you know. And this was early 90s, you know, and it was coming out of a time when it was tough to get a job. I was lucky to get this job. And you know, they took me because they thought I could maybe move into an international sales position.
Okay.
And that was the idea, but I had to start by learning the, you know, going across horizontally in the company. And so, you know, that was I remember that moment. And then the moment when I knew that I probably would be much more comfortable on my own was working for them on a special project that I'd spearheaded. And it was during a time of chaos in the company. And the founder had died. There was a leadership vacuum, and no one was watching me. And I'd moved up to a product manager position by that point, and I'm a curious person, and they gave me a mission. And the mission was to find an application for their cyclical semiconductor product, which was boom and bust. And they wanted a bit more linear growth line, you know, than this up and down. And
So were you a product manager?
I was a product manager.
Okay.
And they said, I was the youngest one. I mean, I was in my 20s. And they said, and they gave me the worst product line in the company, pipe fittings.
Okay.
You can manage this. And we want you to find this super sexy product. You got to find an application where these not so sexy products are being used. So I'm like, okay, you know, and I tend to take on these missions. You don't have to tell me more than once. And when, you know, something that challenging comes into my realm, you know, I'm the kind of guy who likes to figure stuff out.
Okay.
So I was like, okay. And, you know, I didn't realize it then. I'm more aware now that those answers don't come quickly. You know, and I have some anxiety when people say, hey, what do you think about this and this and that? And usually if I have any good ideas, they come much later after I've had time to think about it. So I am much better now about just saying, you know, I'll think about it. Maybe I'll have a good idea. If I don't, we'll run with whatever you have, you know. And there's no ego there. It's just, you know, something better is great. And So I was running this project, and it was an awesome project. And I had kind of broken the rules of corporate America. You know, they told me to stop. Don't do it.
Hmm.
I'm like, well, you gave me a mission. That was in the back of my mind.
They did that based on what? They told you so?
Because of priority, you know.
Okay.
And because of risk. And corporations, while they claim to want innovation, they mm-hmm. absolutely do not want it going on anywhere.
Hmm.
Because sure. Companies, you know, most companies' mission is to protect shareholder value, publicly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's about mitigating risk.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the same
that's
for,
true. Yeah.
You know, any company really that's as big as SwageLock, you know. Right. Let's not take on too much risk. So the idea came up with me poking around in oil and gas. And I found it was an awesome opportunity. Shell, you know, I went to different distributors, and this goes back to the leadership document. They didn't know where I was.
Mm-hmm.
I was on a mission. So I was going around the world, going to Norway, UK, down to Texas, Louisiana, visiting distributors, going kind of against the rules where you're not allowed to talk to a customer. You have to go through the distributor. I called the customer, told the distributor, I got a meeting set up, let's go.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they're like, I don't like this guy.
Mm.
You know, and I thought, well, you know, I just, at that point, I had this feeling in me like, I got to do this. I'm on a mission.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt.
I was told to do this.
Yeah. And so, and you know, through it, I uncovered an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Shell was having massive problems on their deep water offshore platforms in the Gulf of Mexico. They were leaking methanol.
Mm.
Methanol was used to break up the hydrates in that would freeze in oil wells, so the oil, you know, could flow up.
Mm-hmm.
And there was so much vibration, and they had to push down so much pressure.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, 10,000 psi it had to withstand of fluid to get it down that far and to break it up. That, you know, there's nothing available that you could easily weld in a compact form for, you know, a platform. And the only thing that was available are these, what are called, you know, cone, this is probably a little bit nerdy in this realm, but mm-hmm. coned and threaded fittings.
Mm-hmm.
And they are notorious for leaking because they rattle and boom, they come unthreaded mm-hmm. and they're leaking. So they designed these systems to leak methanol. Spark, boom.
Mm-hmm.
It was a huge concern.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, look, man, if you can figure something out, we're all ears. So Shell, or, you know, and I thought this semiconductor product was a compact weld fitting.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so long and short is that fitting was perfect. The only thing was that we needed a proper material for it.
Mm-hmm.
The problem was there was 10 years of PhDs in the oil and gas industry saying you couldn't weld it.
Mm.
Didn't know. You know, so I was pushing forward with this and kind of being like, this is probably what it feels like to be an entrepreneur. You know?
Yeah.
Engineering saying, stop, don't do it. I went to engineering. I said, well, I know we're not supposed to do this, but I was just in Louisiana. Shell's got a problem. Do you want to try and maybe we'll ask for forgiveness?
Mm-hmm.
These guys were old. They're like, let's do it. I don't care. I'm going to retire in 5 years. Let's
do something,
you know, fucking exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So they were behind it, and they were willing to play around. There was a young kid who was like an intern, and he was from, I think, Ohio State University, welding specialist, who was like, yeah, man, let's do it. You know?
So this is at SwageLock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there were all these people who were, the gravity of this idea attracted them.
Right. Yep.
And so I proved out the fact that there was a substantial monetary gain here. That most of the systems that were for high pressure, 95% were this inferior combed and threaded product.
Unstable, yeah, right.
Yeah.
This was a growing market. They weren't going closer to shore. They were going into deeper off water territories to get all this oil.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing we had to overcome was 10 years of PhD saying you couldn't do it. And I didn't know.
Right.
And I honestly don't know at this point what compelled me to think I could convince a room full of Shell engineers that I knew something that they didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Was your attitude, I think we could do this, or I think we should do this?
I knew we could do it.
We could
do it. I knew we could do it. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is, I just don't know. And I remember having, you know, in the middle of this, I knew that I wanted to try something on my own. Because the thrill of that, and just having, you know, that built up some confidence. And I started at the same time that I was pursuing this, I was developing a travel coat that wasn't your dad's coat. So I had to dress up in a suit and tie, but I wanted something that was made out of Gore-Tex. Mm-hmm. And I was...
So tell me, what was that point where... You, like, because that's not a normal thing for people
it's
to
a
do.
It's a very odd thing.
No, it's not odd, but I mean, it's
at
like, because,
it was
a lot of times, that's how products are, you know, developed.
It's like odd for somebody in manufacturing to think they could make a play in fashion.
Okay, true, true.
But at
what point are you like, you know, I'm traveling a lot, I'm traveling all over the world, my options aren't working.
So this is getting to that. So
yeah.
I put myself in a hotel room for a weekend. Shell Oil Company basically said, look, we got it to the point of welding this technology where we could do it. It wasn't pretty, but it was predictable. And, you know, I felt like, you know, the only thing we had to overcome was being able to make it a faster weld because the weld was a bit concave and there's some strength issues that can occur. And
how do you test something like that?
I mean, they've got, you know, you do pull tests, you pull it apart, and you can determine the ferritic austenitic blend of a metal to know if it has too much ferrite, then it might be more corrosive in oil and gas, you know, in a saltwater environment. So it's got this super duplex is a blend of austenitic ferritic,
right?
Ferritic for strength, austenitic for corrosion resistance, and if you miss the balance, if you overheat it, it becomes too ferritic. So you can tell real quick, you know, it's going to corrode, or it's too hot, you know, it cooled too fast, it's hot, you know, it's too weak.
Right.
So we had this huge, I know I'm going deep in this, you can cut it out, but this huge weld ring that's supposed to blend the material's chemistry, but it took a lot of heat to blend that.
Right.
And before, when to heat it up faster, we put this flux on it. It was basically whiteout that we put on there. It was silicon oxide, I think. And
what do you mean whiteout by that?
It was whiteout without liquid. It was powder whiteout.
It
was basically whiteout with water. When we put water in it, it was basically whiteout. And we put that on the weld, and that created high, it gave it high surface tension. So actually, when you heat it, would heat it up, and then the weld would. The weld zone would not be concave. It would.
It,
the surface tension would help it beat up. And Shell said, "Fine. You know, you guys are. It looks like you got something. It's not pretty. Tests work out. You've got 30 days to really prove it out.
Right.
So, you know, we started to realize that the actual weld ring wasn't going to work. It wasn't consistent. We didn't have a solution." So we just said, take the fucking weld ring out. Put the silicon oxide on there. It was magic. Penicillin for welding this material. Overcame 10 years of PhD naysaying.
Yeah.
Guy got his PhD on it. Patents were awarded for it. Okay. Swagelok relaunched their fitting campaign based on this material.
Nice.
And it was based on this project, which was a weld fitting, but it developed into a relaunch of their... The timing was impeccable, you know.
How much time are we talking about from start to finish?
This was 3 years.
Okay.
It takes a solid decade to get something spec'd in this world. But once it gets spec'd, it's there for a long time. So I came out of it with all, you know, patents being awarded. Guy got his PhD on it. I mean, it became a good product for the Gulf of Mexico. You know, the salesmen are still like, thank you so much. You
sure.
know, this is really a gravy train.
Yeah.
You know, for us. And it solved a problem for the oil and gas industry. And I got fired.
Oh, there you go.
And so there's, you know, I was fine with it. I'm like, I got this jacket idea that I've been working on. I'm going to see if I can't move this along, get a job in the meantime, and eventually do this jacket thing. And at the so I was at the point where I kind of felt like, you know, things aren't going to go so well here. I can already feel it. I had this idea. I was working on getting a pattern made and finding materials and getting it manufactured. I had no idea that, you know, what fashion was about and how to play in that industry. But I had enough confidence having done this oil and gas thing, like, well, you 50 engineers, you know.
Yeah, so you still didn't tell me at what point in all that travel you were like, were you standing in an airport?
So, this is how
what
it happened.
What the hell?
I read a book.
Okay.
Called Shosha Man.
Hmm.
And it's a Japanese novel about a businessman in Japan who worked at a trading company who had a mistress and shared all of his ideas with his mistress, never took a risk, and in the end got what's called a Mado Giwa Zoku, which is a window job.
Okay.
And the mistress took all of his ideas and became a millionaire.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
And I thought that's... And I was on a plane from Tokyo reading this, and that's when I realized this is definitely... I need to do something on my own.
Yeah.
You know, that was the confirmation, the sign of the universe.
So how did you, like...
So in the end, the Shosha Man does get an opportunity with his company to take risk in America, and it is successful.
Okay, so you're on a plane back from Tokyo.
Yeah.
And, like, are you just, like... How do you decide to go, I need to work on this, and I'm working this other job, and I got to find time to work on this? And
yeah, that was tough, man, getting fired like that, you know?
Yeah,
they were nice. You know, they're like, look, we just can't... You're just
especially after 3 years of that work.
Well, I was, you know, 10 years into the company.
Okay.
And, you know, my boss was like, I really don't like doing this. I like you, but we, you know, we just can't have you around, man. And
can't have you developing multi-million-dollar products.
You know, my boss was an LA cop.
Okay.
Who, not him. He was the. He became more like the general manager than my direct boss was. I hate to say it. He was a
former LA cop.
He was a bozo, man. LA cop, zero ideas.
Okay.
And was all about claiming ownership for things he doesn't, you know.
Right.
He's not very good at himself, and
that's what you do when you don't know what you're doing.
And it was kind of like it was fun because you know he's like, "Don't do that." I'm like, "All right, man, no problem. I go to engineering. You know, I fly to Norway." He's like, "Where are you? I'll be in on Monday."
Right, exactly.
So he didn't like that, you know.
Yeah.
His boss I'd worked for previously, so I felt, you know, I had that, you know, connection, and I'm like, Mike's not going to do anything, man. You know, he knows, he knows my mission.
Once he has to approve it, he's not going to do anything.
And he knew my mission, too, yeah.
Okay.
And
so did that character trait, so first of all, did you identify more with the man or the mistress?
Oh, man, I definitely identified with the man.
Yeah.
And becoming getting a Mado Giwa Zoku?
Yeah.
I mean... That's worse than being fired, man.
Right.
You get to sit at a desk with nothing to do.
Yeah, it's shame.
That's what they do in Japan because they don't fire you.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, Mado Giwa Zoku is not a good way, man. And, you know, and Swagelok was the type of company where, so what they did is, you know, before they fired me, they offered me to go back to what I started doing, which was customer service. I'm like... So did that...
Did the mindset of disobedience and disruption and, you know, thinking off the grain, did that become part of your approach to design and the whole entrepreneurial, you know, pathway on the design?
Yeah, capacity for faith and rebellion.
Capacity for faith and
rebellion. It's stealing from Frank Lloyd Wright's mini manifesto. You have to have both. You can't be an innovator without breaking rules, and you can't do it without some faith, man, because sometimes things are just not good. You gotta put your faith in something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I can get into that with when I started my thing, and things didn't go so well. What did I put my faith in, you know?
Sure.
Did you
have any kind of background in design and let's leave fashion on the side, but just design in general? as you know, in terms of the concepts and whatnot?
No. Okay. I mean, you know, but I grew up doing everything I thought I should do to fit in. So I played sports.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did well enough academically and was very social.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime I did something artful, mm-hmm. I got a high mark, but I always disregarded it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, what's art? And I disregarded it for a long time. I hated going to art museums. Mm-hmm. You know, I just wanted to fit in. I mean, mm-hmm. Korean kid in Cleveland, you know. And,
right.
And, yeah, so help me out.
It's,
lost my train of thought.
No, I was just asking you about, like, how did you, I mean, I know your work. And you have an eye for design.
Oh, so. So I worked at a dry cleaner. You know, my dad had a dry cleaner.
Okay.
And I was around good products. So I was associated with good product. And I always liked watches. I liked good design in general, you know?
Okay.
And
it was pleasing to the eye.
Yeah.
You could see the method to the madness.
And I like things that work well.
Right.
You know, and I would take apart engines of my moped, put them back together, you know?
Nice.
Play around, taking apart my guitar, putting it back together, taking mm-hmm. apart, you know, taking apart things, putting them
sure,
back together.
Sure.
And I just was fascinated with the way things work and how they were thought of in terms of mm-hmm. putting them together. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I would do things on my own. I play, you know, I creatively, but it was always something like, it doesn't matter, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I didn't, I wasn't schooled in it. So to go off and make a jacket.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, okay. It was really frowned upon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you obviously had your eye on technology at that point, and technology was creating in terms of, you know, smaller devices and thing. You were really tuned into people. Like you were the first that I had. Like I saw what you were doing. Somehow I got, you know, my signal on it, and I'm like, wow, this guy really understands where everything is going with us as sort of portable, you know, business offices, whatever you want to call it, where
sure.
we've got, you know, phones and tablets now and we're able to do business on the run.
Yeah.
And, you know, the sort of the design that existed did not facilitate that.
Right, and no jackets with multi-pockets.
Yeah.
And, you know, traveling abroad was all about, you know, how to carry stuff
mm-hmm.
and not have to carry this big bag all the time, you know. And mm-hmm.
and
so I designed this.
And what year are we talking about?
This is 2000.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, did it feel like you were starting a business?
It did. I mean, it felt like I was, you know, I was on the verge of something.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. no one was doing it. You know, And I guess what, you know, I felt was, hey, I know how to make stuff. You know, I've been involved with how to make, you know, these high-end pipe and valve products.
Sure.
Like jackets, no problem. And knew how to source, you know. So I just felt like there was something about this market that was missing.
Mm-hmm.
It needed to be filled, and I just needed to do it, you know.
Right, right.
And
was it a big deal to go from making a product to making a business?
Oh, it was. It took getting fired.
Yeah.
And I mean, it took some moments of. I mean, this is what I have to do, you know. And
was it intimidating?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It was scary.
How'd you get through that initial ascent?
Okay, so this is good. So I got some prototypes made. Big believer in prototypes. So I got enough resource together to make like 50 jackets.
Where did you figure that? Like you had to have prototypes.
So I just, that's the thing. You know, I just got off the call with a guy who makes the best, highest quality Supima product blank t-shirt in America.
Okay.
And he's from Cleveland, of all places,
wow.
It turns out. And he just called me back because we're looking at getting some in so we can do some print on it.
Mm-hmm.
And no one else could find this guy. I found him in 15 minutes. He calls me back. I've got samples on the way. You know.
So he's here in Cleveland or
no,
somewhere
else?
No,
he's in Colorado now.
Okay.
I think it's part mystery. I mean, it's part, really. I mean, it's part like.
Serendipity?
No, it's part like hard intention. Like, I'm going to find this stuff, you know.
With it.
And it, you either do a lot of digging and find it, or some weird things happen. And yeah. I can go into more instances of weird.
Yeah.
Where the universe kind of lines up and says, yeah, sure. You know, looks like you're ready. Uh-huh. And I don't know why it feels that way, but it does. Like
you need a duck? Here's a duck.
I know,
all of a sudden, the duck appears.
and so that's how it happened. And I found all these fabric suppliers, zipper, you know, and I found all this stuff. I'm like, yeah. Found a manufacturer in Seattle, went out there on vacation, took a week off to check it out, and I felt alive. Hmm. I took the whole week of Thanksgiving off. So I took after Thanksgiving, flew out to Seattle, mm-hmm. and stayed a week and was like, man, this is what it feels like to be starting your own thing. I was mm-hmm. I absolutely knew that was mm-hmm. that's what I wanted to do. It was from, you know, 6 months early, I'd read that book, and then there I was. Going to get some product made.
So
but what, I had 50 products made.
Right.
I had created a website and sold them, man. Yeah. In 2000.
Yeah, I know. Like before, yeah.
And I'm like, this is a market. Mm-hmm. You know, they sold out. People wanted this thing. I'm like, these weren't my friends. These were random people. It was bizarre.
Mm-hmm. So I do want to touch on this eventually, because I know you kind of we're able to ride a wave of, there was a lot of writing back, well, not a lot, but there was enough writing back then. You kind of narrowed in on sort of the PR aspect, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But before I get to that, I got to ask you this question, because what's interesting about the fact that your dad had a dry cleaner was, I can remember when I was driving from Cincinnati up to Cleveland to start my first business. And I was listening to Think and Grow Rich. And there was some comment about, like, if you want to go into a business and be sure you're going to make money, start a dry cleaner.
Yeah, that's right? Yeah, true.
So, and yeah. Then last Saturday, I'm talking with Jack that, you know, I'm starting to believe a lot of this stuff can be in your DNA, because in my family, there's been, like, numerous entrepreneurs. Like, where do you feel you got that kind of... That drive and the direction and intention, like, because, you know, as we all know, sitting here at this table, I mean, people come to us with ideas all the time, but you've got to have like this almost blind passion that says, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah. So I'll that has become more clear recently.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of a conclusion I've come to.
Okay.
And that is American optimism.
Hmm.
And it is weird, like, how Americans are optimistic. And it happened over a conversation with a random guy who was walking his dogs by my ex-wife's house. And I was dropping off my kids, and they were petting the dog. We got chatting, and we chatted for 20 minutes.
Hmm.
He's an ex-military guy.
Mm-hmm.
And we just started chatting it up, you know. And we got on this subject, and he said, you know what? I believe that the optimism we have here is because we're all, and the reason why we have strong entrepreneurship is because we all come from entrepreneurs.
Mm.
Meaning we come from immigrants who That's come right. here with nothing.
Mm.
And yeah. they have a dream that they can make it.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And we all, whether yeah. we're black, white, yellow, brown, mm-hmm. all have that kind of DNA.
Yep.
And so I thought, wow, that kind of makes sense.
Right.
You know, and I saw it, it does. Comes from my dad, man. He came here with nothing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and he made it. He made it in
so
many
he came
ways.
Here from Korea.
He came here from Korea.
Okay.
Went through the Japanese occupation, Korean War, mm-hmm. came here pre-civil rights.
Yeah.
And he's Korean and made it, man.
Mm-hmm.
He made it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a Republican, but he made the American dream, you know.
Right.
He's like the perfect example for the yeah. Republican right. work hard, bootstrap, you know, pull yeah. up your bootstraps and make it happen.
Right.
He's that kind of guy.
Yeah.
He got divorced 3 times, redid himself those 3 times,
mm.
brought over his brother.
And he was probably starting a business when he probably didn't speak the language very well.
Like. Oh, no. Well, he came, he worked for Chrysler.
Okay.
Lost, and he started a dry cleaner on the side, lost his job, lost his dry cleaner, got a divorce at the same time.
Wow.
And started a dry cleaner, got it going, and just kept breaking.
Yeah.
you know.
That's a great story.
It is amazing, yeah. You know.
It's amazing.
I'm like, how'd you do that, Dad? Like, it's like, they don't have time for depression. You know, yeah. They just have time to survive.
Right.
And there's something that, I guess, genetically you
sure.
want
yeah,
inherits,
sure.
you
okay.
know. And,
yeah, yeah. Okay, now I
but
understand.
But I'm nowhere near, my dad is very special. I mean, he's yeah. just a whole nother class of person.
Jack, we're here back for our second half of our interview with JU.
Excellent.
We kind of left off with how Jay got his drive, and we'll continue on.
Yeah, so let's talk about the transition. Every entrepreneur has experiences of periods of time with a lot of noise.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not sure where I'm going. I'm not sure where I'm headed. I'm not sure how I'm going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have signal.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing. It's like, okay, this is exactly what it is. And so can you think of times when because it's an ebb and flow, right?
Sure.
You're in signal. Everything's clear. Everything's
yeah.
cool. And then you get to a point of noise again, and then you come out. Into,
oh, yeah.
So the story is how did you go from a noise to signal?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's always easy, but it takes waking up and being somewhere, doing something, you
right.
know, on schedule or, you know. And I mean, I guess what's important is, so when I decided that I'd do this full time, you know, I'd started a little technology stint, left that, and was like, okay, I'm on my own. Had a daughter on the way.
Mm.
So there's a little, you know, but I, you know, I had some money saved up. I'm like, I'm going to make this happen.
Right.
You know, and I just felt
so
like I had some time.
So this is your oldest right now?
Yeah,
yeah,
Grace.
Okay. Yeah, Grace.
So I'm like, this will work out, you know. I'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And was able to get a few shareholders on board. And, you know, things kind of started working. I mean, I got
so you went out and raised some seed funds or,
yeah,
okay.
And got, you know, 1,000 jackets made.
Mm.
And I knew one thing to do, and that was hustle. And
mm-hmm.
I went to all over the place, New York City, Seattle, was hustling, man, and just trying to get this in store.
Mm-hmm.
I went to trade shows, and by this time I had a nice, you know, a nicer, I should say, polished version of the first Black Coat.
Mm-hmm.
Which was the name of the first travel jacket
yeah.
with multi pockets for the mobile professional that I made, and
right.
Had 1,000 of them made. Went to trade shows, and it was just incredible. I mean, you know, I had to put. I mean, it was a lot of money. It was like, you know, 5 or 10 grand to attend these shows, and I was,
sure.
And I knew, you know, I had to spend money to kind of get it going here.
Mm-hmm. You had to pay for a trade booth and everything.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I had, you know, 1,000 jackets that I had to move, you know, in 2003.
Yeah.
This was pretty, you know, although I started and sold all my jackets online, which was bizarro in 2000.
Right.
It was still like, well, I don't, you know, I got to get this thing out. There's 1,000. I can't sell 1,000.
Yeah.
Well, Amazon started partnering with small businesses at that time as well with their, what is now fulfilled by Amazon.
Right.
And, you know, I was like, man, this is lining up. I can do something. You know, there's a marketplace
mm-hmm.
there. And,
mm-hmm.
and so I redid the website, got it on a new platform. I started hitting retailers. One guy, I mean, he came by and goes, this thing is great. This one guy, and this is a typical mensch. I mean,
mm-hmm.
he went and he brought all, and he was doing consulting for retailers. He had been
mm-hmm.
a retailer himself.
Mm-hmm.
He was at the trade show and he knew all the retailers.
Right.
He said, I'm going to introduce you to everyone here because
mm.
I love this product, man. It's fresh. It's different.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly what's lacking in menswear.
Right.
I'm like, wow, thanks, John.
Mm-hmm.
His name is John Fell. And I haven't talked to the guy forever. Super guy.
Mm-hmm.
I was in 50 retailers within a year. And now this
wow.
is what's weird. Some of those retailers...
Through him?
Yeah.
Or did you just deal directly with them?
Well,
or did he help
no,
broker?
No, he got me in a few retailers
yeah.
who got me in a few more, who got me in a few more.
Okay.
And ended in some prime Japanese retailers. One of
mm.
which is Nepenthes. Nepenthes, I mean, selling in Nepenthes is like... And we'll get to where I am now. Mm-hmm. It's like high-end streetwear. It's, you know, premium streetwear market. One of the guys who's working there started, who was the buyer buying the black coat, just started a line called Needles, which is a popular streetwear brand that the company I'm working for now just launched. Mm. And
it's meaning just, they was started by somebody else and they're
yeah, they brought it in and okay. we've made it part of the assortment. And yeah. I mean, it was just bizarro. Mm-hmm. And it was great, but I didn't understand the cycles of fashion.
Sure.
So I got it to the point where I'd actually, I had a couple cycles. It was a struggle. A couple versions of the black coat had come out, and I felt like I needed something else. Mm-hmm. Now, one of those other things that I had going was this wallet called Slimmy. Mm-hmm. And that was brought to me by John as well. And John said, hey, take a look. This guy's got a patent on a wallet. Maybe you want to take a look at it. You can fit it in and sell it with the black coat. It's minimal, you know.
How long did it take to get the patent? Or was the patent pending?
That was his patent. It was already issued. He got a utility patent on this wallet.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm like, yeah, I'll brand it, and then I'll try to sell it. Well, you know, that's another story. It's a good one, but mm-hmm. and that's what eventually saved me. But
right.
Black coat was going great. Mm-hmm. And it was in retailers. I was selling online. Slimmy was also selling. Mm-hmm. I felt like I needed to raise more money. And the way to do that, I felt I needed something. So something that was going to really get the attention of shareholders. So we're talking 2005-ish now. Mm-hmm. Made for iPod came out. I can't remember when that was, but I'm like, wow, this is amazing. They did this made for iPod program where the accessories.
Oh, that's could right. Get made yeah, I remember for that iPod. Story. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Certification mm-hmm. and can be authorized to make accessories for mm-hmm. the iPod. Well, I'd been looking into the market and saw this fabric technology that mm-hmm. was phenomenal. It was fabric that could be washed and it carried an electric signal, so you could plug mm-hmm. your iPod in and fire it up from the coat.
How'd you lapel. Was that was somebody came up with that and you just read about it?
It was bizarre. I just was researching and I I'd come across it and I'm like, and I looked it up again and it turns out that they were making the controls for one of the early iPod jackets that come out. I'm like, man, all of them are for outdoor. I'm going to make one they were for downhill. I'm going to make one for downtown. Mm. And so that's what I did. And sure enough, I got all these people interested because then the iPod thing, it blew up. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a way that was just incredible, you know. And I
so explain like what's this jacket so going to allow me to do?
So this it allows you to control your iPod from your jacket.
Yeah. Okay. So through the fabric, or
you put your 30-pin connector into the iPod, which was then the 30-pin connector. Mm-hmm. Put it in a pocket. You never have to take it out. Then you can control the pause, play, reverse, volume up right from your lapel.
Okay.
And I thought, this is great. You know, it's going to get all kinds of buzz. I knew it was PR worthy. And I'd already gotten a lot of press for Black Coat. And, I mean, I didn't realize it was going to be this big, though. Mm-hmm. And it would become one of the greatest learning lessons for me, where I had to really find a signal in the end. And
why did you have a lot of people coming for me, a lot of different angles, and trying to say, you got to do this or that?
It turned out to be the worst idea ever.
Oh, okay. I would call that noise.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, it was.
Wait, the jacket that I can control my.
I had that's a bad idea. Founder of Toomey on board to be the chairman. I had these, different investors lined up if he came on board. I had one prototype that I took to a trade show. It was CES that January of that year. I think it was 2006. And
do you have a booth there?
And Lex Sen, who was the technology manufacturer, invited me in and said, hey, we don't have any other product that is for downtown, so this is perfect. The AP, it didn't even work. I mean, I hacked this thing together and it had a plate, it was red. I said, make it red. And I had somebody in Cleveland stitch it on. It didn't even work. You know, we rigged it and but I knew it would work. It just needed the right, we didn't have the control pads sewn in, but it was the best I could do. AP came by. They said, you know, they're like, what is this? And I gave them this pitch, man. This, you know, everyone else is for downhill. We're for downtown. Snap, snap, snap. On the front page of every business section in the world, bar none.
Wow.
I'm not kidding. I land in Jakarta at my manufacturer. Jay, you're on the front cover of the business page. Mm-hmm. Mayor from Galveston, who, former mayor, was a friend of the family. You're on the front page of the Galveston News. You know, mm-hmm. Like,
wow.
This is weird. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, wow, you know.
This is gonna spread through Associated Press.
Yeah, right? This is going to blow up. I bet the whole house on everything, mm-hmm. you know.
Right. Be great if it worked.
It did. I mean, it worked.
You eventually
it would be great if people wanted it and would use chopsticks at an Italian restaurant.
There you go.
That was the lesson. Mm-hmm. Changing behavior takes millions and millions, if not billions of dollars of advertising.
Crossing the chasm.
Or you got to give the product away for free, which mm-hmm. is basically...
That's interesting. Right.
And it's I probably could have learned it, but mm-hmm. change is the most difficult thing. So now it's the big red flag. Am I changing behavior? Don't do it. Absolutely no zone. Big no zone.
Okay.
For me.
Yeah. And you're right. People don't realize it.
The signal for you was coming out with that awareness.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was more. Yeah, it was that, but there was something very personal as well. So that all got bombarded, man. Right. Charlie, the founder of Toomey, pulled out. All the investors left.
Yeah.
Lost my team. I was there by myself.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow.
Well, but I mean, there's a good point there for listeners that when you're going to try to mass market something like that, and on top of trying to change, like, consumer habits and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
It takes a, like, number one, it takes a bunch, like, millions of dollars, and that's not even going to guarantee that you're going to be able to change behavior.
You know, and looking back on it, do you know how much advertising Apple spent on the iPhone from 2007 to 2012? I have no idea. $1 billion.
Wow. Uh-huh.
Yeah. That was, not you know, surprised. That was Steve Ballmer saying, what, no mechanical buttons? Huh, this thing, you know, there's a change of behavior.
Right. Yeah.
And as intuitive and as natural as people thought, there's still this like, I don't know if this thing's going to make it. You know?
Right,
and
right.
They had to convince the consumer that this is the way. And they did it through advertising, through a lot of stuff. That's Apple, you know?
Yeah. Well, and on top of that, people were going, oh, what's Steve Jobs doing next? It's not like everybody was going, what's JU going to do next, right? Yeah, no, I mean, you got to deal with that.
Oh, that's a big runway.
Yeah.
It's a huge runway. Yeah. And so, you know, I had lots of things stacked against me. And you know, it became clear to me that if you go into an Italian restaurant and you ask people to use chopsticks, mm-hmm. they are not going to do it. Hey, dude, they eat noodles in China with chopsticks. It's easier. Put the bowl up to your face and slurp it down.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, man.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Yeah.
$10.
All right.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Okay, free meal for a week. You got it. I'll try it. You know, so.
That's the wrong way, yeah.
So I was left with nothing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I spent everything, man. I was betting on investors coming in. I'd spent everything.
Mm-hmm.
Lined up all this manufacturing, all these jackets, and it was a bust.
Mm-hmm.
People in the end.
So you don't have to go into details, but you're probably putting a lot of your personal wealth on the line.
All of it.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Pretty much. Okay. Yeah. We do that. We do that.
Yeah.
We
and do that. I was a really, and I had my first daughter, and, you know, it was pretty uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And, I remember sitting there at night all alone, and I'm like, man, what do I do?
All right.
And the credit, people who I owed money to from credit card companies, which I used to start the company as well, were calling.
Yep.
And they were calling a lot, and I got a lot. I mean, it was just the highest level of anxiety that I've ever experienced. And I knew one thing, I'm not going bankrupt. No. And, that must be the Korean in me. I don't know. But I was like, that's just not going to happen.
Right.
So I thought, what do I do? And I put all of my faith in my creativity. And that I'll figure this out.
Right.
I'll do it all. I'll do the photography. I'm going to do all the coding for the website. I'm going to do it all. And I'm going to make this work. So, you know, I never want to admit that I'm very good at picking trends, but... The slim wallet was, so I started I was one of the first people to do this travel jacket market. I lost that one, but you know, I was one of the first.
Sure. Sometimes being early is being early.
It is. And so I was also early with Slim Wallets. So in 2003, I launched the Slim.
Yeah, you were.
And no one was offering only a Slim Wallet.
This is when I think George Costanza is still on
Seinfeld
with his fat ass wallet.
And I just couldn't, I was like, man, I never carried a thick wallet. I'm like, why do people do this? I think there's a market. I think that there was some pent up frustration with the lack of, you know, good leather options. Yeah. The thing blew up and it was, I mean, it was a 4-hour work week job for a good stretch. And so I just said, you know what, I'm going to figure this out. And Slimmy was selling really well. It was.
What do you mean by 4-hour work week?
So, come on.
No, I know the book, but I mean, how did that apply to you?
I read the book and I had already started this stuff because I actually was contacted by an outsourcing firm.
Okay.
Who said, we can do this work for you for a lot less.
I got
and I'm
you.
Like, ah. You know,
right, because you said I'm going to do it all myself, right?
And this was back-end office work, like order entry into QuickBooks. I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm kind of bootstrapping it. But, you know, they said $5 an hour, English-speaking college educated. I'm like, oh, okay. You know?
Yeah.
That's affordable. And so they took over. And I at the time I was doing this, I was reading 4-Hour Work Week. And Tim Ferriss kind of spells out, I'm like, this is exactly what I'm doing. You know, let's just take it to another level. Because I started, had another kid, so I was a stay-at-home dad. I'm like, man, my time's getting kind of crushed here, you know?
Yeah,
so,
now I remember when the book came out.
Yeah, and it worked, man. Yeah. So Slimmy was a 4-hour work week business for a good stretch.
Wow,
and
very cool.
It allowed me to play with retail. So I, at the time, started working in retail here in Cleveland a little bit on a consulting basis and learned a little bit. So like, oh, I'll bring in some products. So I brought in some product and merchandise around this, you know, digital lifestyle and started selling, you know, several new brands that hadn't found a place in retail. And I was getting picked up for just reselling this stuff. You know, it was way before Kickstarter, way before, you know, any of that stuff. And before anyone was trying to go on Amazon themselves. So it was going well. And so, you know, that dark moment of what am I going to do? You know, it started going. And I started, I paid off all my debt for credit card companies, you know, and all of the critical debt that was going to force me into a zone.
You know, you didn't want to be in.
I didn't want to be in. And I was kind of like, wow, I got through it. And, and you know, in the end, came out pretty well. And it was just this, and I remember those moments of, and I had to find them again, you know, because when you're in that zone, you know, I was up early, sleeping very little, and just enthused to be, you know, have all the mechanics of a business kind of working. And I was like, man, this is just one dude. And a little team in Vietnam. And it was like, I was quarterbacking, and it was like, wow.
Wow.
So I would, you know, I would get up at 4, work till 8. We were vacationing. And I'd, you know, from 8 o'clock until 8 about 5 p.m., you know, I'd be with the family, and work a little bit more, eat dinner.
Yeah.
And then I'd, you know, be with the family until 8:30, 9, and then I'd go back to work for a few more hours and I'd get up and do it again. And I remember, like, it was just, you know, there's this flow about it. And I you know, to be honest, in those dark moments, you know, it's like, man, you know, I'm going to meditate. And so I was meditating. I was, you know, I'm not religious, but, you know, I was like, there's some energy out there. You know, I'm... I need to
How long
make
are you
sure.
meditating for?
I couldn't do it for very long. It wasn't very good.
Okay.
I've since been doing more meditation. I'm better at it. Like a friend who's like, if you can't do 5 minutes, you need 30. So, you know, I'm closer to 15 now. But, so I would, you know, every morning wake up, read over some goals, pray on it and do a meditation, you know, and then get busy. And that was my routine. And it was the getting busy part, you know? It's just, man.
Yeah.
Pieces and parts are moving. It's like,
yeah.
And There's another thing though, is that it was unstoppable. I felt like I could figure anything out.
Mm.
You know, if something goes wrong with the website, I'll figure it out. I'll
dig in.
Yeah. And so that all got me to zero.
Sure.
Getting to zero was the goal. I got there and then some.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And part of it was consulting. Part of it was Slimmy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we built a new home.
Mm-hmm.
And was like, man, this is a new kind of space. What do I do now? You know? Mm-hmm. And so that's when I launched Bolster.
Mm-hmm.
But also kind of ran into another rut. You know, I went through a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And that started to kind of, that just was a huge, you know, wrench in things. Mm-hmm. And that caused just a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of noise.
And I didn't know.
So when did you get your signal? When did a new signal appear after that?
So I didn't know what to do. And I didn't have the resources because, you know, I was going through a divorce. I didn't want my business to do very well.
Right.
So I'm like, well, I got a call from a guy, the person who I did some consulting with here in Cleveland for the retail business. He said, you know, what does it take to kind of get a new website up? And I'm like, we're talking 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, and so let me back up a little bit. You know, through that period of the 4-hour work week, I was raising my kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's my greatest startup. And I got a lot of advice from people. You know, I'm like, I wish I could be doing more. You know, I feel like I'm going to miss out on the business side. I'm like, you've got great kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One of my mentors at the time was like, that's your startup. Mm-hmm. You'll never regret a good outcome with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you put too much time over here, you're going to regret it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I was a stay-at-home dad. Mm-hmm. I fell in love with it. You know, I wasn't naturally like that, but and to this day, it is. You know, I'm close with my kids. Very grateful for that. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, and you can tell.
And that's my signal. You
sure.
Know? And,
okay. Tell me about your kids and how they felt you.
Well, so they were. You know, they were doing well. The divorce hurt, and I knew that I needed to be close with them. You know,
and
I got this call to help out with this retailer. I'm like, well, this could probably, let me see what I can do here. And he's like, so we've been using this platform. I've sunk a lot of money. In a customized platform. I'm like, what are you doing?
The company.
Yeah, I'm like, get on Shopify. You know, give me two guys. I'll get it up in a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So
that So how did he find out about you?
He knew me. I mean, I did work for him earlier.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Trying to get a website and a blog going, and it was tough at that time because we needed a lot of advertising to get noticed, and
sure,
we just didn't have it at that time, and it didn't work out. But this time around, I mean, we put it on Shopify, and it did more in the first 3 months than it did the previous 2 years.
Wow.
And we grew 300% last year, moved to a new warehouse. The thing is just, and I haven't, you know, I'm still
so there. So the majority of the business being done online, sounds like. Or a good chunk.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's clearly moving in that direction.
Mm-hmm,
and all of that stuff I went through.
Mm-hmm.
And so the signal was, you know, I knew I could figure it out for this guy, and I knew that he was going to spend way less with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, so, you know, we want to keep, you know, what do you want to do? He's like, stay on board. So that happened. That, you know, I helped him get into the advertising realm. I'm there figuring stuff out for him, and now managing his e-com team and doing my other ventures on the side, Slimmy and Bolster. So the signal then, you know, really helped me because I was going through a pretty hard divorce, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, my ex-wife is
very... No divorce is easy.
Yeah. She's a very... They're all bad. She's a very good person, my ex-wife, but it's just tough on anyone.
Sure.
So I just had to be somewhere doing something, and that really helped.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And right before that, I'd launched Bolster, you know, and that was kind of in an interesting phase. That was in my figuring out phase, you know, of what I'm going to do next. And I knew Koyono was kind of, you know, the jacket apparel business wasn't
kind of run its course.
I'm like, yeah, men want man purses in America. You know, and everyone's like, Charlie Clifford called me out of the blue, who was the founder of Toomey. Hey, Jay, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm about to launch a man purse, actually. Oh, well, don't do that. I've got some ideas. What do you think? And so I launched it the next month, and it did almost 200K, and was one of
Kickstarter's. And you did that on Kickstarter?
On Kickstarter.
Yeah. And so tell us about, because, like, you were...
That took some signal, and I'll tell you how.
Right. Okay, yeah, because, well, let me just talk about the fact that Kickstarter has become a distribution channel for product.
Yeah, I mean, it's
to a certain extent, like Meissen knives and stuff like that. I mean, literally, people are...
There's a whole ecosystem around it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's a very different model than just putting a product up and then you shipping it. I mean, they've got layers and layers of fulfillment, advertising, kinds of stuff. So with the Bolster, I was very hesitant to launch it. I had a prototype made, and I knew it had to be made better. And this is, you know, and there was something, I felt like I had to go to the outdoor retail show. Don't know why. Salt Lake City. I'm just going to go. I had this prototype on me. I needed a manufacturer. And one of the first people I see is somebody I started a nonprofit with here in Cleveland. She's from Australia. And she was living in Cleveland, working for one PR firm here. And she's like, hey, Jay, what's going on? I'm like, what are you doing here? I hadn't seen her for years. Oh, I represent the wool brand. And I actually had been looking for merino wool.
Oh, yeah.
So she hooked me up with all these merino wool manufacturers, which I had a hard time finding, oddly enough. So what's even creepier is someone I also started this nonprofit for was there. She'd been in Cleveland, moved back to San Francisco, was a venture capitalist and focused on biomedical pharmaceutical companies, quit, and became a... ran the bag department at an REI store in San Francisco and got into her music business, which she loved. She happened to be asked to do reviews for bags at the show. I mean, she...
Well, you can't make that up.
You can't make this up. Yeah. And she's just like, what are you carrying? Like, this is a bag I'm trying to get made. She goes, that's the best bag at the show. And I'm like, and she's not one... I mean, she does not mess around.
Right, but she knows bags, though. Yeah.
She knows bags.
Yeah.
She knows bags. She wanted to do a write-up on it. I'm like, ah, I'm not ready for that. You know? She was like, this market is bored up, you know?
Right.
So I'm like, wow. And then a day later, I met my manufacturer. So he took it and made it into a production prototype. And there we were. And then I got that. I put that up on Kickstarter. And so before I did that, you know, with launching Kickstarter... You know, I got to the point where I had a good prototype made. It took 2 years to get to that point. And I'm like, you know, I really had some hesitation. I'm like, this is not going to work. You know, man versus. And I got and, you know, having read The War of Art, I'm like, resistance is the devil. You know, and I believe that. Like,
totally contrarian approach.
But, you know, how do you know?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, I don't. So I started calling people. What do you think I should do? I called one person who has been my mentor for a long time. He's like, who cares? Just do it.
Right.
You know, like, my kids are going to get made fun of at school. Their dad's watching it. He's like, no, they're not. Just launch it. Went in the room, press go, and boom, it was done. And literally, it just, I don't know, people were waiting for it.
Right time.
It sold out in 48 hours. I met my goal in 48 hours.
Wow.
And then I got picked up by the PD. That's a whole other thing. Then I got picked up by TechCrunch. And then there was a 200. I'm like, turns out I launched at the very worst time anyone could launch. So I disproved everything they say about when to launch a project. I got completely lucky because I had not... it's a different game now. You can't just do that. So... But something was like, I just have to do this.
Interesting,
But at the 11th hour, if I remember, you had to like jump in on your production, right?
Oh my God, that was painful. So my manufacturer bailed. The 11th hour, when he ghosted me.
Like, how far from delivery are you?
I'm promised delivery in August. We're in September.
Jesus.
And I haven't heard from him. Oh man. I'm like, dude, this is not good. Mm-hmm. You know, once it got to 50,000, I stopped hearing from him. Mm-hmm. I'm like, hey man, what, you know, I flew out unannounced. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey man, what's going on? He's like, whoa, AJ. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, man. Yeah. Oh, manufacturer can't do it. You know, and I'm like, and he goes, but I'll work it out. You know, mm-hmm. I'm like, all right, man. You know, I'm forgiving guys. So I'm like, mm-hmm. okay, cool. You know, I think that he gets the message. I came out, I'll come mm-hmm. out again. And I'd already given him money to buy all the material.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
So that's an example of noise to me that, like, you hadn't even planned on.
No, and that was, I don't know, it probably hurt as much as gout, which hurts more than, yeah.
Right.
Something that just happened with this infection and sticking a Novocaine needle in it, but that was painful, and I just thought, this can't be happening. And
right.
It was making sure that I was being transparent with my yeah. backers.
Uh-huh.
Because that's it, man. You go yeah. bad on your backers yeah. and you're done.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And also, you know, making sure that I could make this happen. So this sure. is great. So, you know, when I traveled in Seattle to get the coat made,
mm-hmm.
I visited a manufacturer who couldn't do coats. He only did bags.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm mm-hmm. like, huh, this was, you yeah. know, a long years time before. Year,
previously. 10,
12, 13 years before.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, guys, I got a bag. Can you make it? Mm-hmm. We'll help you.
Yeah.
These guys rocked it, man. They got mm-hmm. it in October, turned 5,000 bags by December.
Oh.
All of the Kickstarter pledges were shipped before Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
Nice.
You just can't, you know, and the previous, you know, the guy who was helping me with the manufacturing was generous enough to hand everything over, transfer mm-hmm. all the material.
Yeah.
And
how are you handling customer service?
Oh, I did it.
Yeah.
I was not sleeping. I okay. was like, listen, I'm, you know, this is all public.
Right, right, know? Right. Yeah.
I'm like, I'm really trying here.
Yeah.
And
you were just transparent with them?
Or? Yeah. I'm like, yeah. look, I'm looking. Mm-hmm. I've got some ideas on right. who to, and, you know, the current manufacturer's trying to work it through. And I just knew. It was like that feeling with the working for Swage Lock. I'm like, this is just going to happen. There's no option that it's going mm-hmm. to get made. We're going to get this done.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys, sure enough, it hurt to deal with the pressure, but I kind of knew. Mm-hmm. I just knew.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. you know, the thing that took me away from everything were my kids, you know, and being with them, and then all the noise kind mm-hmm. of disappears there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go back to the noise and get back into it. But that worked out really well.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, then soon after that, I got divorced, and then mm-hmm. I find myself where I am now.
Right. And I remember you telling me, because we had a talk about Kickstarter, that you said it's all about the list, like, well, to a certain extent.
Yeah. I mean, your
list. It's not like you just don't tell anybody about it and launch it on Kickstarter and then
hope people find it. No, you need more than that now.
Yeah, yeah.
You
okay.
need... You need
to be pushing everybody there.
Somebody
to
called
Kickstarter.
Me. Yeah. Somebody called me and said, we'd like to back you with advertising. This is how it works.
Mm-hmm.
We take a royalty on the first, like they said, we're looking to back high growth e-commerce opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking to do advertisement deals in the six figures,
mm-hmm.
only advertising deals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is bizarro. Mm-hmm. They take a royalty for the first, like, 10 months and then mm-hmm. they go to percentage after that. I forget the details.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, so who have you backed? All the big Kickstarter projects that you heard of, most of them
mm-hmm.
had large infusions of advertising.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh gosh, I got lucky.
Yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's timing. And it's based on your model.
Right.
You know, some people need to make a couple hundred thousand to break even.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, tend to get a product to where it is where I can go get it made and sell it to a fan base I already have. So Kickstarter doesn't matter if it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've got one product. I mean, it's just super low risk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this last Kickstarter was much better produced, but didn't get any press.
Mm-hmm.
And so it goes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
and I mean,
that was for the wallet, or
that was for the bolster.
It sounds like when you start a project, like you'll have another one and another one right in the future.
Yeah, I mean, so I do low, you know, small smaller arrays that'll cover my initial production video cost for the Kickstarter and all that. And then...
But you don't know that those are going to go.
All of them have so far.
No, but you don't know.
No.
Your next ones, you're going to say, oh my gosh, I'm really into this.
I don't know.
But you don't know.
No, could totally fail.
You're interested in it. It caught your imagination.
Sure. Yeah. And it's low risk, really. I mean...
Because you're not producing it before you...
Yeah. There's no inventory there. Mm-hmm. And you know, Kickstarter's... The backers are great. The community's very forgiving in many ways. You know, even when things don't go the way they should, you know?
Yeah.
Most of them are like, hey, we've been here, you know? And I've got a track record of delivering now each time. So, that matters a lot to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got some new signals. You know, I probably don't want to say too much about right
now. That's fine. But tell me about... So, and I've been thinking about this lately after talking to Phil. I mean, who's knows? I mean, I'm going to guess we got 10% of your story here, which is fine. It's more, it's going to be tremendously valuable to our listeners. Hopefully you're a little bit older, a little bit wiser. You've been a lot of this. You've been in and out of your signal versus noise. Mm-hmm. What are you doing now to try to keep locked in on that signal?
Took a little while to get back to that. So, you know, I get up and meditate every day.
Okay.
I do that every single day.
Is that like the first thing you do?
It's the first thing I do.
Okay.
Yep. Very first thing. And, you know, these days, though, I take my time a little bit. And I'm not doing things, you know, I'm doing things more right than doing things for speed, you know.
That you feel are right.
Obviously. Yeah, I think timing's more important than speed.
Okay.
And some of the timing is
right. I say timing's everything.
Yeah, some of the timing... Strangely.
Or everybody has their own timing, too.
Yeah, I mean, man purses are like what LeBron and, you know, the top of fashion are now carrying.
Right.
Guys are carrying, it's becoming acceptable. So I'm like, wow. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't be on the cusp of something and have it being in the right direction. But I'm really, you know, right now the signal is what I need to do today.
Mm-hmm.
What I need to do today is manage a team that I'm doing for this one retailer and helping
which
them.
Which is like you told me 250 or over 200, right? Roughly.
What's
that? The number of people working in the retail.
Oh, no. They're 70, 80% operation brick and mortar. And then the e-commerce team is 10 people running a substantial amount.
Okay. So, but that theme I've heard at least a handful of times in this conversation of the signal being, I see what has to be done today.
Yes, exactly.
And I do it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And it could be hanging wallpaper or chasing dogs or raising pigs or whatever. Whatever it takes, I've got to do that.
You know, and through this all, I have become very clear on the difference between fun and joy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really about the joy. And I know that fun is short-lived.
Mm-hmm.
And that's maybe some age, that's some experience, but I'm all about looking for joy. And the joy I find in my kids, doing
so true.
Being impeccable with my words, doing the best I can, you know, accepting, saying yes, you know, to the universe and what's given me right now, even though it doesn't feel too good. You know, yes, I mean, there's something to learn from.
What's quality is a virtue. Right, and it's that whole thing about virtuous life, Zen and the art of motorcycle maintenance. So, right, I'm living for quality.
You know, I think, I recently was introduced to Benjamin Franklin's like 10 principles or something. And
big fan of Seneca Younger, I know that.
I am a big fan. Yeah. And being mindful of time. So right now it's, you know, about a kind of, you know, working for someone else and playing around with some ideas and repositioning them and doing it differently. So I'm not doing all the work, you know, and hired someone to do the work for my businesses while I work for someone else.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm super happy. I love what I do. I love being in fashion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, this idea of success in America and what I thought it was, keeping up with the Joneses, doing better than my parents. I do not know who came up with that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did God create that? I don't think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think for my kids, they know this. The American dream is being happy.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean to do better than me. It means to be happy.
Right, right.
And don't become a social worker if you're a poet. Be a poet.
That's right.
You know, and try. Because you can be young. Have something to fall back on, uh-huh. but put your heart first. Yeah. You know. And you know, all this stuff adds up. You know, I couldn't be working in e-commerce for the company I'm working for if I didn't really just go at it day to day and mm-hmm. say, I'm going to do it all mm-hmm. and hack my way through it.
Sure, sure.
You know, and then, I mean.
Retail ain't easy, man.
And you know, this idea of I'm going to make a 4-hour work week happen, you know, because it can, and, you know, being able to like, okay, you know, here are all the mechanics. Here are instructions. I got a whole knowledge base on how to do the mechanics. Mm-hmm. It was just amazing. And I'm utilizing those very same people that for this company. All of that stuff kind of adds up.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that you have to just accept experience and know that you're learning, and it's much more valuable than skill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you do any kind of journaling or sketching?
I design stuff.
Okay. So you'll sit down and sketch it out by hand? Or?
And, you know, when I was going through my stuff...
You don't do it on a computer, you're sketching it?
No, okay. I'm sketching it by hand. That's partially... I like coming up with new ideas.
So is it like the aspect of visualizing your idea and trying to figure it out?
Yeah, and seeing... You know, and you know now I know how to get stuff made.
And you were... That first you prototype. Mentioned very early on you were good at art, so...
Or, I suppose so, yeah.
Yeah,
I
mean, they said you were.
I mean, I love art. More than I used to, and I believe in the artist quite
mm-hmm.
a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're all artists, and
sure.
that's where I put my faith, you know, and
right.
that my own creativity.
Yeah.
And I used to do a bunch of rock art, not impossible because it was done, but very heavy.
Like big stuff?
Big stuff. Like there's no way. You know,
and
I got three guys
moving it
to help
in with
me,
a
you know,
gurney
like,
or something.
You know, I had a couple guys help me to get the second big stone, the third big mm-hmm. stone. I did myself that, and it wasn't like a simple flat. Like it was like
sure.
positioned, and you know, and that was a strange thing because I found uh-huh. that, you know, when you play with rocks, you uh-huh. find this center point, and it just uh-huh. aligns everything. And
right.
you're like, ooh, that's it. You know it.
Right.
It's like, oh my god, and it's standing impossibly there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there's just something that just
mm-hmm.
boom, you know it's locked in.
Mm-hmm.
So I love doing rock art. I haven't done that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so coming up with new product, just going to art museums and
mm-hmm.
getting energy from other artists, you know, that's very satisfying.
So there's something that the three of us enjoy, which is cooking.
Yes.
And I know you are.
Yes.
You enjoy that very much. And I suppose that brings you a lot of joy. And you want to talk a little bit about that?
Scratch cooking, man.
Scratch cooking.
Yeah. Nothing
yeah.
in the fridge, but something great gets made, really.
Okay.
And I
yeah.
love scratch cooking. So
okay.
Taking what seems like nothing and putting it together elegantly.
Do you find that it like takes your mind off
100%.
Of everything like... Nothing else.
That's what I did during the really tough part, you
okay.
know, of trying to get out of a mound of debt.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go in the kitchen, start mm-hmm. cooking, and it just so happens that guess who hangs out in the kitchen?
The kids.
All the women.
All the women. Right.
Yeah, you know, all the men are in the, you know, the
right.
So I'm like, hey, this is kind of a cool place to be. You know,
mm-hmm,
you
right.
kitchen. Why
mm-hmm.
wouldn't women thought like that's kind of,
yeah.
you know.
Do you use recipes or you just?
Yeah,
totally
sometimes.
Don't. Okay.
And then I like to just kind of tweak them based on what I know. I was not a good cook when I started at all.
Okay.
And now I can put things together pretty.
It's
pretty
design.
Efficiently.
That's design.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is,
yeah.
and I really enjoy the idea that. Food tastes better based on the spirit that one puts into making it.
Okay.
I believe there's something about that, man.
Yeah.
Cool.
You know, I always felt that way, didn't want to share it, but as soon as I knew that people became aware that Steve Jobs had every engineer sign the inside of a Mac, do you know why he did that?
Signing inside of a Mac.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Because he felt that there was a spirit about things.
Hmm.
And that there was something else about a product that can't be noticed,
mm-hmm.
but
okay.
there's something else there.
Right.
Right.
And that all things have a spirit about them.
Wow.
And so...
Wow. Did you know this, Jay?
It's true. I've heard of it.
Okay. Yeah, like I never knew that.
So
that's powerful.
It
yeah.
is, man. So, like, I mean...
Like this iPhone I got over here has got spirit in it. I believe it.
Yeah, I think that there's really an element to that, and I feel that in fashion. You know, I'm selling sneakers for a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You know, and I see other people selling for even more, and it's like, what is it? It's art. Mm-hmm. There's an energy about them. People get energy from
That's right, yeah.
You know, and they don't know why. Right? It's, you know, stamp collector doesn't know why he or she collects stamps. Mm-hmm. But they're passionate about it, and they just do it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I really believe in that.
Okay.
Well, Very Jay, cool. thank you so much for...
this has been awesome.
Your faith and rebellion.
And contrarianism. And
contrarian. Yeah, this has been great. So
thank you.
We'll stay in touch and loop back around.